Peter B. Collins with News and Comment. It's October 3rd, Wednesday.
Presidential elections are planned distractions to divert attention from the action behind the scenes.
Like a World Wrestling Federation SmackDown. Tonight is the first of three rounds of presidential debates.
Or a football game when there's rioting in the streets.
And this is the point in the campaign where what are called low-information voters, the people who don't pay much attention, start to pay attention. And most of them will not actually sit still for 90 minutes to watch Obama and Romney trade comments. They will see selected sound bites, clips from this exchange, and if somebody gaffes it up, that clip will be played to death until the next debate. Maybe longer if it really has legs. And so it is a game of chicken, a game of first and foremost trying to avoid making a mistake, delivering that gaffe that your opponent can repeatedly hammer you with, either in free media on a Fox News channel or in paid media in the commercials that come from the campaigns and their super PAC surrogates. And first, let me say that while I'll be watching and I'm interested to see what happens here, these debates are not fair, they are not inclusive, and they are in many ways a very constrained, a very narrow presentation about the so-called democracy that we have here in the United States. The commission that runs the presidential debates is there for the purpose of excluding those who are not nominees of the two major parties. That is the primary function. And from there, they negotiate the ground rules with the candidates, and each campaign has gotten goodies out of the commission that try to obscure the weaknesses or play to the strengths of their guy. And I commend Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez, and the team at Democracy Now! And if you hear this before the debate, log on to democracynow.com. I think it's .com or .org. It's in my bookmarks. And you'll be able to watch the debate. And at the end of each segment, where Obama and Romney have gone back and forth with Jim Lehrer as the moderator, they're going to pause the feed and insert comments from independent candidates, Jill Stein of the Green Party, and my guy in this race, my vehicle for a protest vote, Rocky Anderson of the Justice Party. And I think that that is a good way to fix the way the fix is in at the Presidential Debate Commission. Now, Jim Lehrer has conducted many of these presidential debates over the years. And I've always been frustrated because he plays it so safe. He never really challenges the fundamental premises, the worldviews of a candidate or of a party. And so I don't expect a lot. However, this new format is, as I understand it, they're going to talk roughly for 15 minutes about a single topic. And each candidate gets 2 minutes to lay out a position. And then Lehrer will moderate a back and forth between Obama and Romney about that topic. Now, the downside is that only five or six topics will make it into the presentation. The upside is we may get to see more detail, for example, about the very vague voodoo economics proposed by Mitt Romney. Will we, on the flip side, hear about what is rumored that after the election, if he gets a second term, Obama's going to replace Tim Geithner as Treasury Secretary with Erskine Bowles from the Simpson-Bowles Commission, a multimillionaire checkbook Democrat who is part of the Clinton team and who has a lot of dangerous ideas about cutting Social Security and Medicare as a way to cut the long-term chronic deficit of this country. And just off the cuff, I don't represent these five items as the beginning or the end. But here are five topics that I expect are off the table for tonight's televised debate. Will there be any discussion of poverty and poor people? There's an opportunity here because of Mitt Romney's writing off 47%, and Paul Ryan says there are 30% of the public who aren't worthy of his attention because they don't share the American dream. But all the discussion is always about the middle class. Even a middle class defined as a household income of up to $250,000. And I expect that poverty and the issues of the working poor in this country will not be discussed. I expect that the NDAA, the president's power to detain Americans in the United States indefinitely without charge or trial, will not be discussed. It barely has gotten coverage on the PBS NewsHour that Jim Lehrer retired from. And, well, there's a taboo about any subject related to national security. Likewise, will there be discussion of the recently renewed wiretapping authority under the FISA reforms and Obama's flip on that in 2008, the extension of the Patriot Act and other police state tactics? Nah. Will there be any discussion? Now, I know that this is it's focused on domestic issues. But if we want to pay for any domestic programs for people or for infrastructure or anything else, including Obamacare, we need to cut defense spending. If we're going to come to grips with the deficit and not go off the so-called fiscal cliff at the end of this year, we have to talk about meaningful cuts to defense spending. But that is generally off the table, as all the cuts that get discussed are related to domestic programs, usually safety net and social programs. And finally, will anybody call out that no prominent Wall Street executive has been held accountable for the 2008 fraudulent efforts that led to a near meltdown of our economy? I doubt it. Oh, and I said five, but here's number six, climate change. And credit goes to my San Francisco Chronicle, my local paper, which has a front page story about how the discussion of global warming and man-made contributions to CO2 emissions has been off the table during this campaign. So watch and keep score. Somebody just posted on my Facebook page a funny little panel of when to take a drink during the debates. And I think I'll be drinking early and often. Also, I want to remind you of my friend Steve Pizzo, who believes, and by the way, he's the one who set up the website about Romney's Mormonism called whatmittbelieves.net. And Pizzo has noted that when Romney is telling a whopper, when he's lying, that there is a tell, as poker players call it, a tell. There's a tick on his face and he blinks his eyes. Watch for that and see if you see it as well. Well, a Senate report confirms something that I have believed, and that is that the police state we've created in this country under the Department of Homeland Security and allied agencies is cracking down on American citizens and has not dealt with any significant terrorist threat. Right, Chloe? Chloe's in the background here. The lengthy bipartisan report is a scathing evaluation of what the Department of Homeland Security has held up as a crown jewel of its security efforts. That's the fusion centers, where they try to bring together and connect all the dots between local and federal agencies. Get all that intel that's, you know, grabbed from our phone calls and emails and figure out what to do with it. Well, the Homeland Security Subcommittee of the Senate reviewed more than 600 unclassified reports over a one-year period and concluded that most had nothing to do with terrorism. The subcommittee investigation, quote, could identify no reporting which uncovered a terrorist threat, nor could it identify a contribution such fusion center reporting made to disrupt an active terrorist plot. And as we know, most of the domestic, quote-unquote, terrorism investigations have been ginned up by the FBI, where they plant a paid informant provocateur in a group of people and set them up to do a crime. And just as they try to detonate something or pull a trigger, they say, ha, 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 we've got you. No evidence of criminal activity was contained in these reports. And, as a result, the government's in violation of its own standards, because they're prohibited from storing information about First Amendment activities that are not related to crimes. So we have an organization intended to protect us that violates the rights of American citizens and then violates the rules of engagement by maintaining records that are inappropriate. In a related disclosure, one of these fusion centers set up in the state of Illinois distributed a report a year ago saying that hackers from Russia had broken into a water district's system, a computer system, and sabotaged a water pump remotely. Then DHS stepped in publicly to denounce the report as false, blaming the regional fusion center for spreading unsubstantiated claims and sowing panic in the industrial control system community. But while they were busy doing that, its own Office of Intelligence had been irresponsibly spreading the same false information privately in a report to Congress and the intelligence community. Doesn't that make you feel good? In international news today, Turkey has counterattacked Syria after Syrian military action, and it's not clear to me whether this was a military assault from the Syrian regular forces or from the various insurgent groups that are loosely referred to as the Free Syrian Army. But this risks the expansion of the civil war across borders. And as I pointed out the other day, the Kurdistan, the desire of Kurdish people to take sections of Syria, Turkey, and Iraq and form a new country or at least a self-governing zone called Kurdistan or something like that is one of the factors in play here. And so Turkey has hit back after five of its civilians were killed by Syrian shelling. In Libya, the beat goes on in terms of trying to understand the events that led to the attack on the consulate in Benghazi on September 11th of this year. And it is still a head-scratcher because, on the one hand, the Obama administration is trying to show that they're bloodthirsty, they're going to go out and kill or capture the militants suspected of the attack. And this press release, repeated by the New York Times today, says that the CIA and Pentagon are preparing target packages, the first step in a process awaiting orders from the president to carry out action against those determined to be complicit in the attack in Benghazi. However, separately, they've reported that the FBI, which is charged with conducting the investigation, has not yet arrived in Benghazi, and that the situation is not considered stable enough for them to be there, and as a result, the evidence, the crime scenes will all be stale, tainted, or otherwise of little use to the investigators when they get there. So exactly how are we targeting these people for an upcoming drone strike? How do we know who was actually responsible for what happened there on September 11th? These are important questions, and as I've discussed, I do nothing to protect the Obama administration. But their shifting explanations lead us to believe that Darrell Issa over there in the Republican-controlled House chairing the Oversight Committee, and by the way, they are meeting while Congress is in recess. So they're very determined to politicize the problems in Benghazi, the allegations that alarms were ignored and that requests to beef up security there were not responded to. All of these, I think, are legitimate questions, but they do have to be viewed in an extreme partisan political context. So we'll keep an eye on that for you and let you know as this story unravels further. We learned that special teams of special operations forces have arrived at American embassies throughout North Africa, and this is an expansion of the American footprint, widening our covert war in North Africa. I commented yesterday on the drone attack that killed 13 in Somalia, but this is another situation where the Benghazi attack is being used as a rationale, or if you will, an excuse for putting more boots, American boots, on the ground, and also, of course, to rationalize the use of additional drone attacks. And here in the San Francisco Bay Area, we are quite aware of the corruption and the total mismanagement of the police department of the city of Oakland. For the nation, it became quite apparent last year during the Occupy protests when police overreacted. They attacked protesters in ways that could not be in any way justified. And now there is a report from the court-ordered monitor of the Oakland Police Department. There is a federal judge who has appointed this monitor, and Judge Thelton Henderson is considering later this year putting the Oakland Police Department into receivership under the control of an appointed special master. Meantime, this investigator, Robert Warshaw, issued a 17-page report. He reviewed 9 recent cases of police shootings, including 7 that killed 3 people and injured a 4th, and he concluded that they're very troubling indicators. He said, these cases require objective, unbiased, probing investigation, yet the internal investigations by the Oakland Police Department appear to be, they appear to exhibit the most deficiencies and the least inquisitiveness, which means they're trying to cover up and whitewash. We're told that Oakland's a violent city, so to have violent or abusive cops is something that should be expected. Well, I don't agree with that. And coming out of the Riders scandal back in 2000, that's fully 12 years ago, the Oakland Police Department was ordered by Judge Henderson to correct a series of deficiencies, and they've made very little progress toward the goal ordered by the court. And finally, a very troubling ruling announced today in Connecticut by the state Supreme Court. They overturned the sexual assault conviction of a man who had sex with a woman who has severe cerebral palsy, has the intellectual functional equivalent of a 3-year-old, and cannot verbally communicate. The court held that because the law in Connecticut defines physical incapacity for the purpose of sexual assault as unconscious or for any other reason physically unable to communicate unwillingness to an act, they said that that they have no evidence of her lack of consent. This is a Todd Aiken legitimate rape case approved by the state Supreme Court of Connecticut. Since the victim in the case was capable of biting, kicking, scratching, screeching, groaning, or gesturing, the court ruled the victim could have communicated lack of consent, despite having a 3-year-old developmental capacity. Here's a quote from the ruling. When we consider this evidence in the light most favorable to sustaining the verdict and in a manner that's consistent with the state's theory of guilt at trial, we, the appellate court, are not persuaded that the state produced any credible evidence that the victim was either unconscious or so uncommunicative that she was physically incapable of manifesting to the defendant her lack of consent to sexual intercourse at the time of the alleged assault. Wow. I mean, I often speak up for defendants and for convicts, particularly those who I believe are innocent or have been framed. But if the evidence is there to support this sexual assault on this handicapped woman, how in any reasonable way could the court reach this conclusion? I'll be talking at you again tomorrow right here at peterbcollins.com. Thanks.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until